Anyway, we're in week two in the series, just a bit of a review from last week. Last week we explained that the creation of the world was designed in a way that Olam Chesed Yibaneh was built on a concept of kindness. We spoke a little bit about the importance of giving, how giving allows us to go beyond ourselves, become less self-centered, connect to others. But as we spoke about last week, there is not just giving, because there's giving and receiving. In order to give, there has to be receiving as well. And we spoke about receiving a little bit. Number one, it's not about giving and taking more, but it's more about selfishness and selflessness. And both giving and receiving could be both. There can be selfish giving and selfless giving. There can be selfless taking and selfish taking. So we spoke about, and we went through a little bit. Just two points that we spoke about last week, was that to facilitate giving, there must be receiving. And also we talked about the idea of the Kohanim giving a blessing to the community. And as the halachic authorities say, that both get a mitzvah, both the Kohanim who bless and the people in the crowd who receive the blessing, because you need both in order to make that happening. In order to make that giving blessing happening, you need both the giver and the receiver. And also sometimes we said, if we're talking about selflessness, sometimes the most selfless thing is to actually receive or to reach out for support. Sometimes that takes the greatest humility to be able to do that, and it's a good thing, not a bad thing. But we're going to develop that a bit more as we go along. And then we ended off with a concept last week that the truth is that both giving and receiving need support. It's not easy to give. Sometimes it's not easy to receive. And what we can do on the other side of the equation, whether we are the one giving or the one receiving, we can make it easier for the other person to do what they need to do, which is to give or to receive, helping people reach out for support, helping people give, and so on and so forth. So today, I want to focus on the giving part. We're going to talk a little bit about giving and the whole perspective on what giving means and what it does and how we give and so on. And then as we go along next week or the week after, we've got two more weeks, we'll talk about the concept of receiving as well, developing it a bit more, exploring it. So we know that in Judaism, the concept of giving in Jewish thought is very, very fundamental. We mentioned this briefly last week, but it's very, very fundamental. Normally when we talk about giving, the first thing that comes to mind is the concept of tzedakah, charity. In other words, physical giving, material giving, monetarily giving. When we help those that are in need, we care for those people who are less fortunate than us, we help out people do things they need to do, and so forth, and so on and so forth. And in the Talmud, we have a tremendous amount, tremendous literature on the concept of tzedakah in general, and the concept of helping other people in need, setting up systems in communities which are structured in a way where people that are in need of being helped are helped. And it's very, very clear that from the Talmud that what happens with the concept of giving is that giving is not just an individual responsibility, it's also a community responsibility. And it's not just a noble thing to do, but it's an obligation. In other words, every person has that obligation to help and to give in some form or another. Individually, we have the concept of ma'aser, which is the idea of 10% of net income to charity and to helping others and so on. And we have community concepts of setting up systems of welfare, systems and structures to help people. And therefore, throughout the ages and throughout the generations, there's been this emphasis on building a culture around the idea of giving, the idea of tzedakah. Even the physical act of putting, that's why I have that picture there, of putting a coin in a tzedakah, the idea of one of the Jewish icons or the Jewish symbols that exists in every home is to have a charity box, a tzedakah box, once in a while to throw in a few coins. Sometimes not even about the amount, it's about the act of giving. And the idea of giving, being that it's so important, has been associated with special times. So for example, women, it's a very, very old tradition that women, before they light the Shabbos candles, before Shabbat comes in on a Friday evening, which is considered a very special time, an auspicious time, a time of prayer, that before they light the candles, they give a few coins to tzedakah, them and children and so on. Before a special event, before the high holidays, before Yom Kippur, there's a tremendous emphasis on Purim. Bride and groom of the day and the wedding would give tzedakah, because sort of in preparation. Whenever there's a special emphasis on preparation, a spiritual preparation, it's very often associated with going out of ourselves and thinking less of ourselves and thinking about others, expressed and manifested in this idea of giving tzedakah. In fact, it's so important, this idea of giving, and I've mentioned this before, that we have a very interesting law in the Talmud, and that is that when the Talmud talks about structures that communities need to set up. So in ancient times, in Talmudic times, in Mishnaic times, there was a system called the Tamchui. Tamchui essentially was a soup kitchen, I guess you can call it. And it was a welfare system that was put up, a structure in every community, that the community, when communities were much more organized and centralized more than they are today, it was almost like a tax. If you lived in a community, you had to contribute. And they would set up this Tamchui in order to feed those that are in need, and to feed and help and clothe and so on. And the Talmud has a long legislation discussion about this, about who is eligible, so what is the definition of someone who's poor, who's eligible to receive from this communal kitchen or communal fund, how many meals do we need to provide to each person. And in those days, this interesting comment the Talmud makes is, in those days the culture was to eat twice a day, not like we eat three times a day nowadays, but in those days it was twice a day, late breakfast and dinner. So the halakha, the law is that if someone is eligible, then the community has a responsibility to provide 15 meals a week, which is two a day and three on Shabbat, an extra one for Shabbat, basic clothing, basic needs, and a little bit of extra money so that they can give tzedakah. And of course, the concept behind that is a fascinating idea, because it seems like just recycling the money. I mean, if a poor person has to give away a few coins to another poor person, all that's going to happen is it's going to be recycled and mean that the community has to give more and provide more. But the concept behind it is, as we've explained in other times, is that the idea of giving is so important that everyone has to give. And if we're providing for someone's well-being, which is obviously physical but emotional and spiritual as well, the well-being of a person means that we need to facilitate an opportunity to give. And therefore, even if someone is completely poverty-stricken and they have nothing, and therefore they fall back on the community to help them, to provide for them, part of providing for them means you have to give them that opportunity, not just to be a recipient, but also to give. It's an amazing concept. That's the idea of tzedakah. But of course, the idea of giving extends far beyond tzedakah, right? So we have this idea that in the Torah there's a pasuk, a verse, famous verse, "Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha," which means "love your neighbor as yourself," as it's normally translated. And the Rambam, Maimonides, talks about, he says that many, many specific details, acts of kindness, acts of giving, fall under that general rule of "Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha," loving your neighbor as yourself. For example, "nichum avilim," comforting the mourners. Or accompanying the dead. In other words, going to a funeral, honoring someone who's passed on. Which incidentally, the funeral part of this, I mean, it's not the topic for today, but the funeral part of the grieving process actually is not so much for the mourners or the relatives, it's actually specifically for the person who's passed on, and it's considered a chesed, it's considered a kindness. In fact, it's considered the ultimate kindness. It's called chesed shel emet. It's called true kindness, because when you go, and even if it will be someone that you know about that has no relatives here, but there's a tremendous mitzvah in going and accompanying that person as a sign of respect and honor, and it's called true chesed because you don't get anything in return. It's not like with human beings where there's maybe a test as an ulterior motive. I do you a favor, you might do me a favor. Here you do the person a favor, then you're not getting a favor back. So it's called true chesed. Bikur cholim, which is visiting sick. Visiting sick is another act of giving. In other words, it's not giving is not just money. It's not just things. But it's giving in so many different ways, like visiting people who are unwell, or simchat chatan vekala, to go and to participate in a wedding to make the bride and groom happy on their wedding day. It's considered a huge mitzvah to dance, to actually make them happy, and to do things that will make their event and their wedding a joyous occasion in order to bring joy into the foundation of their life and the future journey. So all these are different aspects, different components of the whole general concept of giving. And of course we are taught that Jewishly, the concept in Jewish tradition, in Jewish culture, in Jewish literature, we are taught that starting all the way from Avraham Avinu, our patriarch Abraham, whose whole being was hospitality and giving and kindness and welcoming and so on and so forth, that because we come from him and our foundation starts from Avraham Avinu, that it becomes part of our DNA, so to speak. Part of the DNA of Jewishness is the concept of giving, helping, support individually, communally, and so on and so forth. Which is why, by the way, you find in many, many communities, including ours, but particularly in bigger, bigger communities, you find this incredible sense of community that happens among Jewish communities with so many different organizations and so many different support groups. If you go to America, it's the most fascinating thing. I mean, if you go to New York, for example, hospitals, where you'll find that, unfortunately, I know this firsthand, relatives that have been there, you find these incredible, they call them Bikur Cholim organizations. They're people who do this for no reason whatsoever. They do it just for chesed, just for kindness, the most amazing things. There's these rooms set up in these hospitals, which are known to have a lot of Jewish people, a room where you can go and you can either pray or you can get kosher food or you can just hang out, or people that come every day from communities, from Williamsburg, from Brooklyn, from Borough Park, and just buses every day of people coming to visit and just to show support. And just the most amazing, amazing thing. Just recently I was talking to someone about an organization called High Lifeline, which is an unfortunate organization because it's to help children with cancer. But the stuff they do and the help they give to families and kids and camps that they do for these kids, just the most amazing things. And they run by people. Hatzolah, for example, is another one. All these different organizations were founded on one principle, the principle of giving, the principle of community needs to set up structures where you help people. People who are in need, people who might need things, need to be helped and need to be supported. And the people who get involved in these things are amazing people. They're people who do it for no reason. They just do it because they've seen a need. I don't know if you know, for example, we have Atzola in this community. I don't know if anyone knows how Atzola was started. Atzola is a worldwide organization today. Atzola was an organization started in America when a person came out of shul, I think it was in Williamsburg, out of shul one Shabbos, and someone had fainted and had a heart attack, and the ambulance didn't come in time, and the person passed away. And he said, impossible to he said you can't just see this happen and not do anything. So we've got to start a community service where we can get there quickly, the response can be really, really quick, so that we can save that happening. And that's how Tzola worldwide was born, and today it's an amazing organization all over the world, which is incredible. So I'm just bringing it as examples. I mean, there's so many more, but just examples of things which are all based around one concept, the concept of giving, the concept of supporting, the concept of chesed, both individually and communally. But let's take it a bit further and just to break it down a little bit to understand some of the important concepts of giving and what that means to each individual. So first of all, I want to clarify something really important, and that is, last week I talked about that it's not so much giving and receiving, but it's more about selfishness versus selflessness, right? And in giving, you can have both. You can have selfish giving and selfless giving. So I want to break it down just a bit further so we don't get the wrong picture. There are actually, I want to suggest that there's kind of three aspects, three levels of giving, right? There's true selfless giving, and that's amazing when people give completely selflessly. No ulterior motive, don't want any recognition, or whatever the case is, just for the sake of giving, and that's amazing. And that in itself has many, many different components. I think I've shared with you once the story of a great Hasidic Rebbe who strived his whole life to be able to give selflessly. And once he was walking in the street with his followers, with his Talmudim, his disciples, and he saw someone clearly in need, someone who was starving, hadn't eaten, someone who was destitute, who needed help. So he put his hand in his pocket and he pulled out some money and he gave it to that person and he kept walking. And then a couple of blocks down, he says to his Talmidim, he says to his Hasidim, his followers, I want to go back. And he went back and he gave him again. So his Talmidim, his Hasidim were a bit puzzled. What was that all about? Like, what did he think? Did he misread his budget? Did he misunderstand the books? He thought he can give more, but he less. So now, you know, what was it about? So one guy decided to ask him. And he shared with him the following. He said like this. He said, I gave the first time, but I didn't really think it was true giving. True selfless giving. Now, you see, halavai, we should have anywhere near this level. But he said, I gave him because I just couldn't stand to see him that way. My conscience. I couldn't walk past a person in need, in such need, in obvious need, and not give. But then I thought to myself afterwards, so I didn't really give for him. I gave for myself. Because I couldn't bear to, it's my feelings. Now, we should all have such feelings, but at the end of the day, he said, it's my feelings. So I decided, you know what I want to do? I've cleared my conscience. I've cleared my feeling. Now I want to go back and really give. Give just because it's important to give. Okay, so that's on a certain level. And the self, that's the ultimate, I suppose, of selfless giving. Or, for example, as the Rambam says, we've talked about this before also, the writings in Maimonides, who writes a lot about the concept of giving and charity. And he goes through eight levels, eight different levels of giving, one higher than the other. And one of the higher up ones is the concept of matan besaser, to give anonymously. To give where you don't get any recognition or credit for it, because that's like really selfless giving. Incidentally, it's not the highest form of giving. The highest form of giving is actually to give to a person to set themselves up. So it's not charity. In other words, that's the biggest kindness you can do for someone, is actually to set them up so that you help them or you loan them in a way where they're now able to be self-sufficient and even pay you back. That's actually even a higher form of giving, which is another discussion. Okay, so that's selfless giving. But the alternative to selfless giving is not necessarily selfish giving. Because there's something what I call in the middle, and it's called giving with self-interest, which means it's not selfish giving, but we're all human beings, and we're all born with an ego, and we're all born with some level of self-interest. And therefore, often, when we do give or we do help, it's almost inevitable that the ego shouldn't get a little bit in the way, not destructively, not negatively, but, you know, wouldn't mind someone said thank you, or, you know, get a little bit upset if the person didn't say thank you afterwards. You know, I helped them out, you know what I had to do for them, and, you know, they could have at least sent me a card kind of thing, right? Which is normal, we all feel like that, it's okay. Or, you know, would it be nice if the president gave me a thank you at the end of the function, you know, after all, I was one of the people that made it happen, or all that kind of thing, right? And I wanted to clarify that, because it's not selfish giving. People give for the right reasons. But, you know, we're all human beings. And God forbid anyone should not give because they don't want to be riddled with self-interest. At the end of the day, giving is giving, right? And when you give and you help someone, it's a good thing. And if we're at that level where a little bit of our self-interest creeps into it, so be it. Let's not give because of that, right? So, and giving is always good for us. It's always good for us, most times. We'll see with either giving which is negative, but giving is normally always a positive thing. And when we give to people or we help other people, even if our ego gets in the way a little bit, and even if we do want that little bit of self-interest to come into it as well, so be it. We'll work on getting rid of the ego a separate time, or simultaneously, or in parallel programs, or in other therapies, or whatever the case is. But it shouldn't stop us from giving, because giving is always a mitzvah. And it's always a good thing. To help someone is always a good thing. So I wanted to clarify that, because when I talk about selfish versus selfless, selfish is always good, selfless is always bad. But there's something in the middle. It's giving with self-interest, which is good, just not the ultimate. Now, there is also, of course, a third form of giving, and that's selfish giving, which is destructive. And that's not good. And those are the things we talked about last week, where sometimes people give to manipulate. People give to control. Right? People give only for self-interest, without any trace of chesed mixed into it, right? You know, people give to score points, only to score points, things like that. That can be destructive, and sometimes that's controlling and manipulative, in fact. And often, actually, it doesn't lead to good things, and sometimes that kind of giving is better, doesn't it? Or sometimes we don't give people their space. We smother them, we overwhelm them. As parents, we sometimes do this. Sometimes, and maybe we'll talk about this more next week, sometimes the biggest form of giving is actually not giving. It's holding back and giving a person space and giving a person room to actually develop on their own. Sometimes we don't do that because we want to give so much, so we give and control, we smother, we overwhelm, and that can actually be destructive giving. So it is important that when we talk about giving, there's some exploration or some investigation or reflection, I should say, about the type of giving that might happen in our life sometimes, but it's not number two, but it's number three. And the number three giving we do need to move away from. Right? So that's an important clarification. And I suppose to put it in summary, it's this. Our goal is to stay completely away from selfish giving and to move towards selfless giving, with the emphasis on towards, because we might not get there, and none of us are perfect, and we might get closer to selfless giving and not completely to selfless giving, because as I've said many, many times, part of the mission that we have on this earth in terms of our own personal self-growth is to work on our ego, and it's not something you do in 20 minutes. It's something that takes a lifetime, if that. And sometimes our ego just remains, and it's there to challenge us, and it's there for the struggle, and that's fine. So we shouldn't worry about that, but we should move completely away from selfish giving, which is destructive, and move towards the journey towards selfless giving as much as we can do within the context of our journey. So let's develop all of this a little bit. Let's understand, first of all, that in giving, there are always two components. There's the benefit that is given or happens to the one that's giving, and of course the benefit that is there for the one that's receiving. Sometimes they both happen together, sometimes not, and it doesn't matter. So for example, on one hand, there's a concept in the Talmud that if someone loses money, you walk in the street and a coin falls out of your pocket, says the Talmud. And it's a lost item, and it has no marks of identification. And I'm mentioning that because it doesn't fall under the category of someone finding it, having it to find the owner, and so on. And someone in need finds it and benefits from that. The Talmud tells us an amazing thing, that the person who lost the money gets a mitzvah. Mitzvah of tzedakah. Now, you weren't intending to give that money to tzedakah. You might have intended to buy a packet of peanuts with it, but it doesn't matter. It's a schut, in other words, it's a merit. It's God allowed you to facilitate a mitzvah. Right? So because God allowed you to facilitate a mitzvah, therefore, even though you don't know you've done the mitzvah, but it's added to your merit, so to speak. Okay. Why? In other words, it's one aspect of tzedakah where we find that intention, meaning the consciousness, the awareness, or the intention, the meaning, the feeling of the one giving is irrelevant. What's relevant is, one important aspect of giving is that the recipient is in need, and therefore the recipient needs to get what he or she needs to get. It's irrelevant who gave it or if the person giving it is even conscious of that giving. Which is true in some times. However, it's not always true. There are aspects of giving where intention or the style, the tone, and the way it's done is incredibly important. In other words, that's where the giver comes into the whole picture. Both important for the giver and the receiver. So we have a very, very famous concept where the Talmud tells us the following. The Talmud says, and when the Talmud talks about tzedakah, it always talks in terms of poverty-stricken people, just as a symbol of clarity. So the Talmud says that when an ani, a poor person, comes to the door and is asking for assistance, and you give a pruta, you give a coin, that's the expression in the Talmud, to a poor person, you receive six blessings. There are six sources in the verses about the benefits of giving charity and so on. So there's six blessings that a person receives when they give a coin to a poor person. However, says the Talmud, if you give that pruta, if you give that coin, and you give it with a smile, you give it nicely, you give it in a way where you make the person feel good about it. You make the person feel the least embarrassed about it. You give the person's dignity intact. You give it with a warm heart. You give it with what they call sever panim yafot, with a nice face, a smiley face. You give it with a nice thing. It says the Talmud, you receive 11 blessings. I'm not sure exactly the maths, but what's 6 and what's 11. What is clear from that is the following. What is clear is that the style of giving matters tremendously. You might think that if someone is in need of something physical, you know, all they really care is about getting the money. Smile, you didn't smile, shkoyach, it doesn't matter, you gave me what I need, it's fine. Yeah.
Let's just ask if you're thinking of giving to someone and someone says, oh, they're only going to use it for alcohol, drugs.
Okay, so that's a very, very important question. We're actually going to deal with it next week more. Because sometimes giving needs holding back, and that's another form of giving, but we'll talk about that. It's a good question. But let's say we're talking about personal legitimate need, right? So the concept is that it's not true. even though what the person is asking for, and this is so important to understand, even though what the person is asking for is something physical, but really what the person needs is something much more than that. And in fact, it's not just the person who's asking needs more than that, it's the giver needs more than that also. In other words, the concept of giving, as we've talked about in the last few weeks, is that, and other times, is that God designed the world that it should be giving and receiving. He wanted giving. So giving is not only for the recipient. Even though, if I don't know that I'm giving, I still get a mitzvah, but ultimately giving is also for the giver. Meaning on a practical level, when you give, it's for the recipient. That person needs help, so the main thing is that the help gets there. But it's not so true. In other words, giving is for the giver as well. Now, for the kindness, for the giving to be beneficial for both, the intention, the consciousness, the style, the tone is critical. Why? Because if giving, let's talk about the giver for a second. If giving is in order to create a kind and generous person, if giving is to create and develop my personality, that I'm a person who can go beyond myself, I'm a person who can help others, I'm a person who becomes more flexible and more tolerant and more accepting and more helping and more generous, then to give begrudgingly doesn't do the trick. It does it a little bit, but it doesn't really do it. If the idea is to turn me into a kind person, I need to do it in a kind way. I need to do it in a way where I'm enjoying it, or at least I'm trying to enjoy it. Or at least I'm making an effort to enjoy it. So therefore, the tone and the style is critical for the giver. But more importantly, it's important for the receiver also. Because I said before, the receiver might think that all they need is the material gift, but actually they need much more than that. Why? Because here it goes to the fundamental concept of the whole idea of giving. Giving is not only giving physical things, or it's not only helping or assisting with a specific project. Giving is much more abstract and much deeper than that. Giving dignity to a person is greater than giving something material. It's much greater than helping them with a specific project. It's giving them self-worth. It's giving them confidence. It's giving them a sense of well-being. It's giving them a sense of dignity. And one of the things that the Talmud continuously teaches us is that to compromise the dignity of someone is considered one of the greatest transgressions. As we know, the Talmud says that it's better to jump into a furnace rather than to embarrass someone in public. Why? Because it's based on this concept that every human being is created in the image of God. The Tzelem Elokim. A person, the human being, the creation of a human being means a creation of a godly imprint. And when you compromise the dignity of another human being, you're compromising that imprint. And compromising that dignity and that imprint, God treats it as if it's tantamount to something fundamental and as great as, for example, idol worship. You know, in the Ten Commandments, you've got the five on the one side and the five on the other side. And the commentaries explain how they actually are cross-referenced. It's another discussion. It's quite a fascinating discussion. So each one. But what's interesting is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the very, very first commandment, which is I am your God. On the other side, the first on the top of the other five is Lo Tirtzach, don't murder. And the commentaries explain, because murdering someone in the literal sense, but also murdering someone in the figurative sense, which is embarrassing them, putting them down, humiliating them, compromising their dignity, undermining their godly imprint, goes against not just that human being, but it goes against Anochi Hashem Elokecha, it goes against I am Hashem your God. So that's on the negative side. But therefore, on the positive side, there can be nothing greater than giving the dignity to someone, upholding the dignity of another human being, giving them self-worth. And that's why it's not just about giving what they need or what they think they need. It's how we give it. It's how we treat the other human being. That's also a form of giving. And sometimes when people don't need anything physical, but they do need dignity building. They do need a warm word. They do need something special. And that's an incredible part of giving. Therefore, sometimes there's also a concept. We've spoken about this in different contexts, but there's two obligations when it comes to giving, even going back to the concept of tzedakah. The commentaries explain that there's two concepts of giving. Obviously, there's a limit when you give things that are material. There's a limit to how much everyone could give, right? So therefore, and there's a priority. And the Talmud talks about priority concepts of giving, and then there's personal preferences, and that's all good. And that's fine. Not everyone is obligated to give everyone. Not everyone is obligated to help everything and everyone. There's guidelines that are given to us halachically, and there's also personal preferences, which are all good, as long as we give. On the one hand. And there's a limit to how much person can give, and everyone has to be responsible, live responsibly, and that's maybe we'll talk about that next week as well. And the Talmud talks about that. The Talmud talks about not overgiving, because sometimes that can be irresponsible as well. However, there's also a concept about not turning people away. And sometimes, because why? So what happens if I've reached my quota and I get a knock on the door and someone's in need, legitimate need? So I say, I'm sorry, I can't help you. My quota is done for the year, next financial year, or next whatever it is, right? Or my time is I don't have any more time to help you if it's time they want, whatever the case is. So that's fine and that's okay. But we always have to try give them something. Even if it's something small, whether it's in time or monetarily or whatever the case, or help, whatever the case is. Why? More for the dignity than anything else. So there's something is even, I tell people, if you can't afford, it doesn't matter, but if someone asks, give them something. But do it nicely. That concept that the Talmud says about giving with a smile, giving with sever panim yafot, don't forget that's worth more. Those blessings are worth more than the giving itself. So sometimes the not humiliating someone else is just about helping them with something. Don't turn them away so they feel embarrassed that they came to you in the beginning. It's all part of giving dignity. It's all part of preserving the humanity of other people. That's why also we need to understand the context of every form of giving. Sometimes, as the Rambam says, that anonymous giving is good because sometimes people are embarrassed, therefore, to save that embarrassment. It's good, but sometimes not. Sometimes it's important to not be anonymous, and it depends on the context. It's all about selflessness. This is the concept. It's always about moving towards selflessness. And moving towards selflessness means, and this is where the crux of giving is all about, moving towards selflessness means that I don't think about my giving, I think about what does that person need. And we've talked about this many times. Giving means that I'm not giving because I want to give. Go back to that story that the rabbi gave because he felt bad. But on our level, giving means I'm not giving because I want to feel okay that I gave and I want to sort of clear my conscience and not feel guilty. I'm giving for the other person. I'm giving for the other person. I become a better person if I'm giving, and giving means when you think about the other. So let's think about the humanity of the other, the dignity of the other. What's the best way to give this? What's the best way to reach this person? Every person, every situation, every concept might be a bit different. There's that concept of giving that the Talmud talks about greeting someone with a smile. I think I told you that the great Amora, the great sage of the Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan, said about himself, to emphasize this point, he said that one of the things he was very careful about all his life was never to let anyone greet him before he greeted them. He said, and even though he was the great leader and the great rabbi of the community, he said, Me'olam, no, it never happened, he said, when I went in the street, that someone greeted me first. It doesn't matter who it was, afilu nochri shabashuk, even a non-Jewish person that's not part of my community, just someone in the street, I always made sure to greet him first. What's the big deal of greeting someone first? Because when you greet someone first, you show enthusiasm. Now, obviously, when two people greet, someone's going to greet first and someone's going to greet second, right? So it doesn't always have to be a race, but the concept is there. The concept is not to wait. If you greet me, okay, then I have to say hello. You know, you walk into a train and someone says, good morning. Oh, yeah, good morning. It's the idea of being aware of people around and always looking for opportunities to give. Giving away doesn't cost any money. Just giving away that, hi, good morning, how are you? Nice day today, kind of thing. Smile at a person, that idea. There's a fascinating piece in the Rambam in Maimonides, where he talks about different aspects of chesed. He talks about, like, you know, visiting the sick and comforting mourners and so on. So one of the things the Rambam talks about is achnasat orchim, hospitality. Now, hospitality is a very, very beautiful thing, and we learn it from Abraham Avinu. We know that the story, I mentioned this last week, Abraham, who always loved to welcome guests, and on the day that God made sure there was no one would come because it was too hot, he was upset because he wanted to give. But just to clarify, when the Rambam and the Talmud talks about achnasat orchim, it's not social hospitality, which is also a very good thing and a very nice thing, But I'm just mentioning, when we talk about the term hospitality in the Talmud, it's referring to people who come from elsewhere, come from out of town. Travelers who don't know where to stay. Right? That's the concept. Or where to eat, necessarily. So that was Avraham Avinu. Abraham's Achnasat Ochrim was he used to look for people who were traveling, invite them in, and so on. So the Rambam, when he talks about Achnasat Ochrim, he says that the main part of Achnasat Ochrim is the end. He said Achnasat Ochrim refers to three things: feeding people, Achila, Lina, which is giving people where to sleep, and then what he calls Leviya, accompanying them out. Walking with them as they go out or as they travel to make sure they're okay and on the way safely. And that is the main part of Achnasat Ochrim. Why is that the main part? Because that's where you show that you mean it. That's where you make the person feel good. Until you've done that, the person staying with you doesn't necessarily, and I say necessarily because it's not necessarily true, but doesn't necessarily know if you really meant it. If the food you gave him was because you have an obligation to do it or because you want to do it. Says the Rambam, the main part of an achnasat orchim, the main part of hospitality is the leviya. It's walking with them. That's the main part for the giver and the receiver. That's what makes the hospitable person and makes the host a generous person, and that's what gives the dignity and the feeling of self-worth to the person who stayed in your house. Makes him feel or her feel that he or she wasn't an imposition, and there's no greater giving than that. So that's what the Rambam quotes from the Talmud, but the Rambam puts it in very clear terms. So all of this, when we talk about giving, highlights an incredibly important concept to bring it down to implementation level and what it means to us every single day of our life. And I say that because sometimes people, you know, I mentioned before these amazing organizations that exist all over the world and here, and people that go into Chesed. And while they're wonderful, they also create a problem when we hear about them. Because often when we hear about them, we think, and correctly so, we think, shoo, that's great for like a big chevreman, as they call it, you know? Someone like really community-minded, who's talented, who's a big mover and shaker, can do these kind of things, but I'm not sure I can. And that might even be true, because not everyone can do this kind of stuff. Not everyone can build big organizations. Not everyone can build huge chesed organizations that become worldwide organizations, although we shouldn't underestimate our own ability, because often we can do things that we don't think we can do. But nevertheless, it takes certain resources, whether it's financial, whether it's talent, whether it's smartness, whether it's networking, whether it's connections, whatever the case is, it takes a certain level of resource to be able to give big. But what we need to learn from these examples we just gave and understand the concept of giving is this. Giving is essential. Giving is essential for every single person. But what we have to understand is that we might not all have the resources and the talents or the financial resources to do things that are huge. But we can all give. Everyone, doesn't exist a person who cannot give. Meaning, everyone can give something positive. We can all smile at someone else. We can all do small things and make other people feel good. We can all be aware of people who are struggling and just say something nice to them. We can all reach out to people. We can all just do things that inspire or lift or build on some small level other people. And we never know how far it could reach. We never know how it's going to go. We never know what kind of effect it could be. And there's so many stories. If we have time, we'll mention one. Because it's not what we give half the time. It's how we give it. And it's what we say. And it's the interest that we show. Now, we're all not perfect, and we have our good days and bad days. But nevertheless, that's the concept of consciousness that we have to build. The consciousness we have to build is an awareness, a culture of giving. And giving doesn't mean to give big. On any level. It doesn't even mean to give big psychologically or emotionally. Sometimes it's just a small thing. Sometimes I might not know exactly how to support or counsel that person through a very big crisis, but I can still send a nice text, or I can still say something nice. Not always a text. Text is sometimes a cop-out, but sometimes not. So we have to clarify that. But sometimes it's good, but sometimes it depends on the context. Right? What I'm saying is we can all, and smiling is contagious. I once read a whole article about when you smile, person smiles, and other people smile at someone else. You never know the ripple effect of what could happen. So it's not, I think this is the concept I'm trying to say, it's not what we give, although that's also important. Obviously people need what they need, and it's important to get people's needs met. But it's also, more importantly perhaps, how we give it, and the dignity that we give, and the self-worth, and the warmth that we give another person. When I was reflecting this, I was reminded of a story of my grandfather, Allah Shalom, which I tell stories of him sometimes. So he told me a beautiful idea once. He said that, you know, I mentioned this last week, the mitzvah of the Kohanim, blessing the congregation. So he said he once went with my grandmother, Allah Shalom, they once went for Pesach to Switzerland. And it was the first time he'd gone away. He was rabbi all his life. He could never leave on Yom Tov, but it was after he retired. And he went and he stayed in this Switzerland. It was a religious hotel, and the Pesach was done to the unbelievable standard. And everyone, it was like a whole new community there. You know, no one knew each other, but they'd all come from all over Europe. And nowadays, there's hundreds and hundreds of them. But this was like fairly uncommon in those days. And he got to know everyone, and he was a person who liked people. He said, network. He was the real person who used to give with a smile and make people feel good. Anyway, he became very well known over Pesach. So on the last day of Pesach, called Achron Shel Pesach, the last meal that they had everyone together, he was nominated, he was a good speaker also, he was nominated to thank the host, to thank the owner of the hotel. So he got up and he shared this with me, he said the following thing. He got up and he said, I was asked to give a vote of thanks for the owner of the hotel, but I was thinking to myself, why should we thank him? We all paid good money for this. So he said, the guy sitting there, he said, this was not a cheap exercise. Understandably so. I mean, it's expensive to make Pesach. We all paid full money for this. So he got his money, we got our Pesach, and goodbye. Why should we say thank you? Then he said, I thought about it, and he said, and I think I know the answer. He said, the answer like this. He said, he reflected on a custom that happened specifically on Yom Tov, and must have happened then too, in Shul. He says, every Yom Tov in Israel happens every day, but in the diaspora, the Birkat Kohanim, when the Kohanim give a bracha to everyone else, it's done on Yom Tov. I don't know if you have noticed this, but there's a culture, a tradition, that the Kohanim come up to the front of the shul, they do their blessing. The men put the talis over their head, and sometimes children underwear, whatever. And then the Kohanim stay there for a few minutes, and then when the chazan is finished, the Kaddish, after the Amidah, the Kohanim go down, or they go back to their places. On the way, everyone screams out, Shkoyach Kohen, Shkoyach Kohen. It's like Shkoyach means thank you Kohen for blessing me. He said, I was thinking, you can ask the same question. What do you mean thank you Kohen? It's a mitzvah, he's got to do it, he doesn't have a choice. If a Kohen wants to do what he's supposed to do in terms of his halachic or moral obligation, he has to get up there and give us a blessing. It's not like a choice, not something he did out of the goodness of his heart, it wasn't voluntary. It's a halacha, you have to do it. If you're a Kohen, you come to Shul on Yom Tov, you got to be up there giving a blessing. So why should I say Shkoyach? He said, oh, he realized why he says Shkoyach. Because in the blessing at the Kohanim bake, they make a blessing before they start. It says, they make a blessing as we do before we do a mitzvah, like Asher Kiddushanu Mitzvotav Vetzivanu, we thank God for commanding us to do the mitzvah. And it said, Levarech et Amo Yisrael, to bless his nation. And then the tradition became for the Kohanim to add one word to the blessing, Be'ahava, with love. Yes, it's true, the Kohen is obligated to bless me, but he can do it out of obligation. But he doesn't. He does it out of love. So it's for the love that when the Kohen comes down, because he did it with such a good heart and enthusiasm, or we hope he did it with enthusiasm at least, we assume, we give him the benefit of the doubt, that's the way he did it, we say Shkoyach Kohen. Not Shkoyach because you blessed me, because you had to bless me. Shkoyach because you did it with a heart, you made me feel good about it. So my Zayda said, that's why we want to give a big thank you to the host. This apparently was a very good host. He says, yes, we paid good money, so we got the service. The service is worth X amount of dollars. That's very nice. But he didn't give it to us like this. He gave it to us with love. He gave it to us with such friendliness. He went beyond his obligation, finding out if we're okay. He made friends with us. We became close over the Pesach. That's why we're giving him a thank you. And I was reminded of the story because it's a very, very powerful idea. Because it's worth more. Giving is an obligation, really. But we can enhance that so much more by giving something that's beyond tangible, giving something that is just building the other person up. And to that, there's no limits. Everyone can do it, and it has no limits. Because we can always do it more, we can always improve in it, we can always grow in it, We can always do something. We can always find a way, whether it's saying thank you, whether it's gratitude, whether it's just complimenting someone, whether it's just making someone feel good, just making us just a smile, just a how are you. The previous Lubavitch Rebbe has a whole section of one of his talks when he came to America, and in those days the American communities were still cold. It didn't have that warmth yet of you know, built up communities. And he spoke about, you know, when you greet someone in Hebrew, it's called Shalom Aleichem. See, he spoke about the American Shalom Aleichem. It bothered him. It improved after time, I think. But he said there's two kinds of Shalom Aleichem. There's the Shalom Aleichem which is cold, and the Shalom Aleichem which is warm. Someone says Good Shabbos to you, or Shabbat Shalom, or Chag Sameach. There's two different types. Sometimes it's a formality that they need to go through because they're being polite or following etiquette. Sometimes it's coming from the heart. And a person can tell. So we can work on that. That's something we can work on. That's something that's a giving that we can all work on. It's the way we say hello to people. It's the way we smile at people. It's the way sometimes just giving a friend a call to say, how are you? I haven't seen you for a while. Those types of giving don't cost, they don't take a lot of time, they don't cost any resources. They just need a mindset. They need a real mindset for us to actually be in that mode of giving and to understand the power of giving. And to understand that giving is about moving, as I said, moving towards selflessness. And moving towards selflessness means you think, we develop a mindset about what can I do for the other person. And that means a lot of things. It means, like we've spoken about before, that you know, we do things like Nichum Avilim, going to comfort the mourner, or visiting the sick. It's always remembering that I'm there for the needs of the other, not for me. So sometimes I've got to stay a short time, sometimes I'll stay a long time. Sometimes just popping in for a minute, I have to know what the other person is comfortable with. I'm not going into the length because we've talked about it many, 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 many times. But it's also understanding the feeling and understanding what is it about, and understanding that giving is what makes us better people. But it's understanding this. Right? These are just some of the things that we can just share with people. But the important thing is to understand this, that giving lifts us when it's not about us. When it's about having a mindset that we're there for the other person, then giving lifts us to unbelievable heights. But it only lifts us and is beneficial for us when it's not about us. When it's about that mindset about how can I strengthen someone else? Either it's by meeting their needs, or perhaps more importantly, how can I make their day a better day, a more positive day, a happier day. Now there's more to talk about giving, which we're going to do next week, and of course we want to also talk about receiving, which is a very, very big topic in its own right. I've just cut it short a few minutes because I just want to ask you to give your attention to Robin for a few minutes.
Thank you.